means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, the commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashtaprayesha Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatyuttama Shloke Bhaktim Bhavati Naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on the Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in the best of songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, The Activities of the Prachetas, Chapter 30, Text Number 29. Yena Upashanti Bhutanam Chullakanam Apihatam Antahito Antavidye Kasman No Vedanashisaha Yeno Pashantir Bhutanam Chullakanam Apihatam Antahitonta Ridhihe Kasmano Vedanashisaha Yeno Pashantir Bhutanam Chullakanam Apihatam Antahitonta Vidihe Kasmano Vedanashisaha Yeno Pashanti Bhutanam Chullakanam Apihatam Antahitonta Vidihe Kasmano Vedanashisaha Yeno Pashanti Bhutanam Yeno Pashantir Bhutanam Chullakanam Apihatam Antahintonta Vidihe Kasmano Vedanashisaha. Ladies? Yeno Pashantir Bhutanam Chullakanam Apihatam Antahitonta Vidihe Kasmano Vedanashisaha Yeno Pashantir Bhutanam Chullakanam Apihatam Antahitonta Vidihe Kasmano Vedanashisaha Yeno Pashantir Bhutanam Chullakanam Apihatam Antahintonta Vidihe Kasmano Vedanashisaha Yena. By which process upashantihi, satisfaction of all desires, bhutanam, of the living entities, chullakanam, very much fallen, api, although, ihitam, desiring many things, antahitaha, hidden, antakridaye, in the core of the heart, kasmat, why, naha, our, veda, he knows, na, not, ashishaha, desires. Translation, when the Lord, out of his natural compassion, thinks of his devotee, by that process only are all desires of the neophyte devotee fulfilled. The Lord is situated in every living entity's heart, although the living entity may be very insignificant. The Lord knows everything about the living entity, including all his desires. Although we are very insignificant, why should the Lord not know our desires? Please repeat. When the Lord, out of his natural compassion, thinks of his devotee, by that process only are all desires of the neophyte devotee fulfilled. The Lord is situated in every living entity's heart, although the living entity may be very insignificant. The Lord knows everything about the living entity, including all his desires. Although we are very insignificant, why should the Lord not know our desires? Srila Prabhupada's purport. A very advanced devotee does not think himself advanced. He is always very humble. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his plenary expansion as the Paramatma, or Supersoul, sits in everyone's heart and can understand the attitudes and desires of his devotees. The Lord also gives opportunity to the non-devotees to fulfill their desires, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Mattak Smatir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Whatever a living entity desires, however insignificant he may be, is noted by the Lord, who gives him a chance to fulfill his desires. If the desires of the non-devotees are fulfilled, why not those of the devotee? A pure devotee simply wants to engage in the service of the Lord without material desire. And if he wants this within the core of his heart, where the Lord is situated, and if he, the devotee, is without ulterior motive, why should the Lord not understand? If a sincere devotee renders service to the Lord or to the Archa Vigraha, the form of the Lord, all the devotee's activities prove successful because the Lord is present within his heart and understands his sincerity. Thus, if a devotee with all confidence goes on discharging the prescribed duties of devotional service, he will ultimately attain success. Om Jnanatamarambasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So here we are hearing the prayers of the Pachetas. The Pachetas, the sons of King Prachinabharhishad, as you recall, went out to perform severe austerities to become qualified to propagate descendants. And meanwhile, we heard the whole interchange between Narada Muni and King Prachinabharhi, the story, the allegory of King Puranjan and so forth. And now in this chapter, we're hearing the prayers of the Prachetas. After all their austerities of thousands of years underwater, they get darshan of Lord Narayan, and now they're offering their prayers to him. And from all of that austerity and all that meditating, what was their mantra that they chanted? Who remembers? The song of Shiva. That's that very special song of Shiva. which is, of course, a glorification of the Lord and a prayer for devotional service. So when they get the darshan of Lord Narayan, they naturally glorify him, and then they pray. They have a prayer for him. And their prayer is that that he will simply be satisfied with them, that they will be able to satisfy him, and that they will remain as devotees. And this is the pure prayer of the real Vaishnav. An actual Vaishnav, as described in the second chapter, first canto, Ahoitukiya Pratayata Yadma Supasidati, is fully satisfied because the bhakti or devotional service that he's performing has no material motive and is uninterrupted by anything else, cannot be interrupted. So this ahoituki word and this concept is central to our understanding, is central to the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Because there is also different kinds of bhakti. There is karma mishra bhakti, there's jnana mishra bhakti. There's devotion that can be mixed with the desire for material things and also the desire for liberation. But the very beginning of the Bhakti Samhita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami, who's carrying forward the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he explains that these are coverings on real devotion. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karma jnanavatam. That real devotion, the kind of devotion that he's going to speak about in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and that is the flag, if you will, is the central theme of the whole Sampradaya following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is without any other desire. This word ashisha comes up in this verse, and we're going to speak about that. Anyabhilashita sunyam, being devoid of any other desire categorized as karma or jnana or anything else in the category of material fruit of desire or desire for knowledge leading to liberation. These cover and obscure the pure devotion that he's speaking about. And what is that devotion? Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam Bhaktaruttama. This is the highest devotion, which is characterized by always acting with the intention of pleasing Krishna for his desire. So in this verse, which really is a companion verse to the previous verse, the Prachetas rather, was saying that, my dear Lord, you are the killer of all inauspicious things. You are compassionate upon your pure devotees. Through the expansion of your Archivigraha, you should certainly think of us as your eternal servants. Now compare that to the verse in the Shikshastika, where Lord Chaitanya teaches us how to pray, I nanna tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishameva vambodo kripayata vapada pankajastita duli sadrishang vichintaya. Really, he's praying here that you will please think of me as simply a little particle of dust at your lotus feet, O son of Nanda Maharaj. I am so fallen. I have fallen into this horrible ocean of birth and death, although I am your eternal servant by nature. And now I am simply helplessly in this flailing around in this ocean of misery. And so please pick me up and place me as an atom at your lotus feet and think of me in that way. So this idea that the Lord also thinks of his devotees, this is being expressed here by these prachetas. And the basic principle is that the Supersoul is always with us. Krishna is always with us in that form as the Supersoul. And he knows everything that we're thinking. He knows our ardent desires. And he also has desires. His desire is that we will turn to him. This famous analogy of the bird in the tree, the two birds in the tree, right, it comes up in the Bhagavatam as well as the Upanishads, is that the individual bird, he's forgetting about the other bird in the tree, and he's simply trying to enjoy the fruits of that tree. Now, the tree is compared to the material body. The fruits of the tree are the experiences of sense gratification, both gross and subtle, that we can enjoy in this body. And that completely absorbs our mind. We become habituated to enjoying a certain kind of sense gratification, say in the human form. And this is like coming from previous birth. There's very illuminating instructions of Narada Muni and the King Pachanabari at the end of his instruction describing the process of transmigration. How these desires are cultivated lifetime after lifetime. And when the gross body falls, the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, and ego, They are repositories of all these desires, unfulfilled desires. And then you get another body, maybe a human body, maybe a different kind of body, to try to fulfill those desires. And in that body, you then try to engage in that way, and you cultivate new desires. And in this way, it goes on birth after birth after birth. So the Supersoul is always witnessing that. He's the one who reminds us what we wanted to desire and how we can try to fulfill it. Mattak smatir, jnanam apohanamcha. He gives remembrance of what we wanted to do, and he gives also the intelligence by which we can try to fulfill those desires. So this is how the soul remains conditioned until he gets some a kind of a break in the clouds, if you will, where the sun of pure knowledge comes in through the medium of the pure devotee, one who is not bound up by these material desires, but whose only desire is to please Krishna, whose ardent desire is to see that all these fallen, ignorant, suffering souls become enlightened and start to cultivate new desires. Everything depends on desire. If you think about it, this love of Godhead or prema, what is its character? Its character is this ardent desire, say, of the gopis, okay, the perfect devotees, the ardent desire to serve Krishna in a certain way for his greatest pleasure. That is what pure devotion is the purification of these material desires, or eradication, if you will, but we all must have desire, to the point where our only one desire, our sole desire, is to please Krishna. So here the Prachetas are saying that you know our desires. We articulate them anyway. They've just offered these prayers. A prayer is a heartfelt expression of some desire to the Lord, isn't it? It can be material or it can be spiritual. So we are taught how to pray by our great acharyas, beginning with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshastika, that we shouldn't pray for anything material. Because Krishna sees that desire, he may fulfill it. And then we'll have that material desire and go on with that instead of wanting Krishna. So how to reform our desires? I was thinking about this. First of all, it's this word asha. Now you may recall that in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about the divine and demoniac. And there he talks about how the demons, they're bound up by these desires that are like ropes. Asha, pasha, sata, buddhar. He says they're bound up by hundreds and thousands of these material desires, which are just like ropes binding them to this material world. This is the famous Riddhya Granti, or the knots in the heart. So each of us in this world has a certain demonic tendencies or asuric tendencies, and now, fortunately, we're trying to cultivate these suric tendencies, or these devotional tendencies. So these desires, having been cultivated for many, many lifetimes, are not so easy to give up. It's just like an addict. Everyone in this material world is an addict. We're all addicted to the sense gratification of various kinds. And sometimes we see an extreme example, someone will become addicted to some drug and say, oh, there's an addict. But actually everyone in this world, in this material world, is an addict. We're addicted to sex, right, at a certain age. That becomes very prominent, okay? Eating, right, various kinds of food, relationships, you name it. There's uncounted thousands of desires. And once we engage in that, or try to fulfill that, and we experience some pleasure, that just deepens the addiction. And then you want it again and again. And then what happens is, over time, as you get older, you can't enjoy it anymore. Just like the drug addict. Eventually it becomes just a hellish experience where you're just trying to take the drug to come back to the normal position away from the agony of not having the drug. Right? There's no positive pleasure there. So as age gradually destroys the instruments by which you can enjoy, then comes the other side of this material desire, which is lamentation and fear and grief that, oh, I can't enjoy anymore, what I used to enjoy. So, let me take this drug or something so I can prolong the enjoyment a little more, But it's hopeless. And by all of this unlimited sense gratification, you inevitably perform great sins and you fall down into lower species, and this is a tragic condition of the living entity. So in devotional service, we are practicing yoga. And yoga basically means controlling the senses, controlling the mind, and fixing the mind on the Supreme. Right? Jana vastata tadgitena manasa pashyanti yam yogina. To see the Lord within the heart by meditation and control. So what is it that happens when we fix the mind on Krishna in any way, even for a few seconds? Well, what happens is that we're attracted because Krishna is all attractive. It's just like after all these billions of births of not perceiving Krishna, of him being hidden behind the curtain of Maya because we didn't want to see him. We wanted to see the various phantasmagoric illusions and illusions of this material world. Now, somehow or other, by the mercy of devotees, we come in contact with Krishna through his holy name, through his books, through his prasadam, Archimurti, the Sangha, somehow or other. And there's an attraction there. The heart is now pulled a little bit toward that. It's not pure, but there's some attraction there. So now, if we understand, and here's where the intelligence comes in, we need to understand that this attraction is the one we need to cultivate. And so many times in the Bhagavad Gita, where does, you know, Krishna talk about that? You know, about, you know, it begins, tasmat tanminyanyado niyamya bharatashrapa. In the beginning, control the senses, right? And fix the mind on me. So that's the whole purpose. You control, create by the association of devotees, the strength of mind in your heart to stop this mad machine of trying to enjoy your senses, and rather to spend time fixing your mind on Krishna, chiefly through the chanting of the holy name, and especially Sankirtan. I was just thinking of this while we were performing a little Harinam here, how this is the perfect Yuga Dharma for the age. Because we're so immersed in the senses, the physical senses, isn't it? We need something. Just to sit in meditation is not enough. Our senses are so saturated with desire, with kama, Krishna says in the third chapter, that we need something, a whole dynamic, total body meditation, not just to try to focus the mind, you know, alone. I mean, that's there at one point. But we need this dancing and chanting and you know, total immersion in this way. I was thinking how you pick it up, isn't it? If someone walks in, say in the Sunday feast, the first time in the temple they walk in, and they're a little interested and they're receptive, you know, then what happens if there's an ecstatic kirtan going on? Well, they may actually get drawn into it, right? You know, they see everyone's dancing, their feet start tapping, you know, assuming the drumming is right together, hopefully. And then, and everyone is, they're drawn into it. And they may even chant and see the deities. And they're experiencing something. You know, it's entering their heart. Now, they may walk out, and they will walk out eventually and probably continue for the most part, but there's a change that's taken place there. And if they meet a devotee who can explain some of the philosophy and they get a book and so forth, this may be the beginning of their spiritual life. It is this beginning of their spiritual life. So, the idea is that by the association, just like if you go into some rally, right? And they're chanting, USA, 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 right? You're going to pick up on it, right? And says, yeah, you know, and then it becomes like the logic or the mood of the mob, you know, someone who would never have thought of it. If you all get together and then you go, let's get the Muslims, yeah, you know, like 8 years ago, and it was like this horrible thing that happened. It's a kind of madness because association. You know, and the chanting of this, of the emotion, the feeling is contagious. So on the same side, or on the other side, on the pure side, the same thing is there for chanting in congregation and meeting in congregation. That's why it's so important to come together and study Bhagavatam together, because the understanding can be greater in association with devotees. This is a sadhu sangha. So when we are serious about devotional service, and we know and we remember, and this is right from the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita, we should always remember that the Paramatma, he understands everything that we're thinking, all that we're doing. You know, we remember that. Now the Paramatma is the super soul, the acharya or the guru is the external representation of the super soul. So by surrendering, which is the first step, surrendering to the Acharya, to the Guru, someone who we have faith in, that this person is actually giving me the knowledge as it is, and is an example, will not cheat me, right? Then you are surrendering to the Super Soul. And by the activities, devotional service, what are we doing? We come together in Mangalarti, we honor the Guru, right? This expression of gratitude, that very first verse, Samsara Navanamalita Loka, that here we are burning in this fire of material life, and a pure devotee, out of his great compassion, Srila Prabhupada came, and to shower upon us this nectarian message, of bhakti, of devotional service, and the holy name, and all the gifts that we've been given, that we should feel eternal gratitude for that. We should actually feel every morning that should open up in our heart. Because through that gratitude, then everything else comes. Then we say, yes, I have a responsibility to practice devotion, to improve my devotional service, to move forward, and not just to slip back and become illusion again. So anyway, all of this coming together, the morning program, the principles that we've been given, the books, these are all strengthening us in directing our mind, absorbing our mind in Krishna, and using our activities of our senses and our mind and our words and our wealth and everything else for the service of the Lord, and in this way increasing our desire to serve the Lord, which He sees. He sees every detail that we're doing. And the reciprocation is that Krishna helps us increase that desire. And He reciprocates with happiness and peace and indifference to the material world. And that sense of happiness and joy gradually thickens and thickens until it becomes a constant happiness. Stai bhava. You know, these are there. The soul can be happy all the time. When we're feeling down, we're feeling depressed, we're feeling discouraged, we should know that's totally unnatural. That this is our disease. The natural state of the living entity is to be always happy. Anandam buddhivardhanam. Patipadam purnamitasvardhanam. At every moment to taste that nectar for which we're always anxious. Even in the midst of difficult circumstances. This is right there in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Even in the midst of difficult circumstances, the actual yogi, devotee, the bhakti yogi, remains a dhira, prashanta, peaceful in himself. So many things may be going on externally. Even at the point of disease and death, or other difficulties, there's still that connection with Krishna and that peace, that essential peacefulness and happiness and joy. So that's there for us, and for everyone, every living entity, provided that we carefully follow these principles of devotional service. I was just reviewing this fourth canto. I remember working on it back in 1973 and 74, I think proofreading the whole thing. And it was just like every time these cantos came out, it was like a new revelation. Wasn't it, Savasur? You remember when they came out one after another? It's like Purunjan's story. It like changed the whole movement, you know. This is instruction of Narada Muni. It was like a revelation. What to speak of the Chaitanya Charitamrita as it came out, new information. But this Bhagavatam, it's ever fresh. It's still there. It's always there. By Prabhupada's incredible mercy and effort to enlighten us. And it's beyond me. By reading these instructions of Narada, the King Prachanabhari, I kind of reviewed the whole couple of chapters there. One must become aware of himself as a spirit soul and the illusion and the self-defeating activity of trying to practice anything for material advancement. It's an illusory hope. And that brings us back to this asha, because it all comes down to this asha. What is our aspiration? What is our unending hope? There's one verse quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think Rupa Goswami wrote it, and he's saying, Na prema shavanadi bhakta tateva yogo tava vaishnavo jnanam va shubha karma va kirvi yasti va hina tadaka sadake svitatapya chede mula sati he gopi janavalla bhava dayate ha ha madashaiva mam. So here the devotee is painting himself as very unqualified. I don't have any prema. That's for sure. I don't have any love of God. I don't have any attraction for hearing and chanting. Shravanadi Bhakti Dabhivaya. I don't have any mystic power of a yogi. I don't have any good birth. I don't have any knowledge. Basically, I don't have any qualifications. I'm very hina, you know, dina hina. I'm very fallen. But you are most favorable to the most fallen. Hina tadika sadake. So, O Gopi Jana Vallabha, I am still cherishing this asha, this hope, to one day get your favor, to one day somehow that I will be considered your devotee. So this kind of asha is good. We have to cultivate. But now it is the season of hope, is it not? We have just elected a new president, and we can, you know, it's hope. He ran on a platform of hope, and people have hope. It's always that way. All the politicians run that way, but he articulated it more. So now people have all of this hope. But this is a hope, you know, whatever it may be, you know, that they will be prosperous in this world, that, you know, that we live very happily here and get rid of these problems. Health care, okay, my diseases will be gone. It is to be defeated. There is no hope in this material world. We have to be very, very pessimistic about that. And the comparison I gave a lecture, a Sunday feast in San Diego, is to the gambler. I don't know if any of you have ever been gambling. When I was a kid, I used to be into gambling for a short time. So think of the slot machine. Okay? The slot machine. They're big. Anyone who knows, that's the biggest moneymaker for the casinos. So they get these poor people come in there, you know, everyone knows you really can't beat the machines on the average. They're slotted against you, right? They're calibrated against you. But thousands of people are pulling. Well, why do they go there? Because there's some hope. You know, their life as it's being lived, oftentimes older people, retired or whatever, you know, poor people, whatever. There's some void in their life. So they go there so that they can get some action, some hope, some excitement. And what happens is they put in so many quarters, and then eventually out comes $10 worth of quarters. Oh, now I'm winning. Right? Now I'm winning. And then over in the corner there, somebody, you know, there's thousands of machines. Over in the corner, somebody won the jackpot. $10,000. Oh, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, congratulations. They make a big, you know, they put them on the stage. You won the jackpot. Oh, that could be me. Right? Hope. They're selling hope. And they keep pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling. So it's just like Maya. Maya Devi is the greatest cheater. Right? She it's her job to keep us in illusion. So you work, and you get a little pleasure. It's just like winning the $10 in the slot machine. So then it gives you more hope, right? And you look around you, right? Advertising. Oh, there's that person enjoying. I can also enjoy that way, right? Oh, I put more money in the slot machine. In other words, more energy. You invest more of your energy, your life energy, your wealth, your attention, your intelligence in the material enterprise. But ultimately, you lose everything. Just like the gambler. He loses everything. He's bankrupt, you know? And so ultimately in this material world, you lose everything. Maya cheats us out of everything. Mrityu savaras charam. Krishna takes it all away. Ultimately, isn't it? So we shouldn't be fooled by this gambling casino. This is a big gambling casino. And everyone is betting that I can be happy in this world. Let me invest some of my energy there. And they're all losing life after life. We should invest our energy in Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. You know, to the outside, does it look like we've sold out? We're not having these big careers, we're not making thousands of millions of dollars. You know, the whole American dream we don't participate in. House of your own, you know. Isn't it? But we're making the best investment. And it's a sure thing. The bet is a sure thing. Even just a little advancement on this path will keep on going down the path, and eventually you'll win the jackpot. You'll back to Godhead. So, thank you very much for your attention. If there's any comment or question on this, Bhrigupati Prabhu.
Is it a material desire to desire good health for the purpose of executing devotional service?
No. No, this is where we have to understand, is that Prabhupada himself kept good health. He arranged to have that morning walk. He had his massages. He washed his diet. When necessary, he took medicine. It's just like keeping the ISKCON cars. Oftentimes we find, well, It belongs to Krishna, therefore I don't have to worry about putting the oil into it, right? why do we just went out on Sankirtan and there's no gas in the tank, right? So this is an illusion. We need to take care of anything that Krishna has given us for his service, including our body, and care for it as is needed to keep it in good running order as far as possible to perform his service. So there's nothing wrong with that, and in fact, it's a responsibility. If we become neglectful of our body, that's a sign that we're not really Krishna conscious. You know, we're thinking we're up in the clouds with Krishna, or Krishna will take care. But Krishna is giving us the good intelligence so that we can take care, and that we can keep ourselves in good health for his service. That's not a material desire. So we have to distinguish that. Just like a temple, so much money needs to be collected to push on a temple, to perform a great festival, to put on the Rath Yatra festival every year. I'm sure, you know, a good part of that is getting all the donations, getting the Lakshmi necessary. None of that is Maya. That's, Krishna says in the 11th canto, read 11th canto, he talks about that. You know, building temples and doing all these things is great devotional service for him. The danger is that in the process of doing that, we start to covet some of the things that we're collecting for Krishna. That's Maya, that's illusion. And that's, something we have to guard against. But as far as you're keeping our good health together, this should be done. Within reason. We don't make a fetish out of it. We don't, the body is not the goal. You know, that's, you know, the yoga studios all over the country are basically concerned with making you very limber and so forth, for better enjoyment of various kinds, you know. That's obviously a corruption of real yoga. But, no, bhakti yoga, part of it is, keeping all facilities that we have working nicely for Krishna's service. Any other comments, questions? Prema Sankirtan Prabhu. Oh, we have a mic. Very nice.
Sometimes we have subconscious desire, you know, that appear maybe from previous life or whatever. You know, so what's the difference? How Krishna look at that desire? Did he want also fulfill this desire? For example, you know, sometimes, you know, I try to not be, you know, lusty, but somehow, you know, if I, especially in Sankirtan, if something's happening, if I approach, you know, Maya Devi, whatever, you know, automatically, without any desire, you know, some kind of attraction come. Could be from previous life, or I'm not enough pure. So what's difference between, you can say like subconscious desire, a real desire that you really meditate about, I want to do it, yeah. You know, or fulfill your desire?
Well, first of all, okay, yeah. Even with the mic, we need it. Luckily, I know his language, so I can... He started asking about what is the difference between a subconscious desire and a conscious desire. What he described, however, was not a subconscious desire. He described going to the airport and sometimes, you know, distributing to a lady, I assume, and having automatically there's some desire that comes up. But we understand that Krishna knows all our desires. So what about these other desires? Is he going to fulfill those also? Well, no. The point is that our heart is filled with all kinds of desires, but we have the choice about which ones we are going to try to fulfill. In other words, there's that famous verse, apuyamanam achala pratistam, right? This is in the Bhagavad Gita, the section about the soul and how to attain peace. So the realized soul, all kinds of stimuli, you know, are entering into his heart, but he remains just like the ocean. Pacific Ocean is a perfect example. Pacific, he remains Pacific, peaceful. Even though there's so many rivers of desires entering into his heart. Because he doesn't act on them. In other words, this is where prayer comes in. In other words, when these other desires come, we have to say, Hare Krishna, you know, Krishna, Krishna, save me. This is what Krishna is saving us from, is all these, and eventually the other desires subside to nothing. These are like seeds, you know, you plant in the heart. Previous lifetime, they get planted, and then they're fructifying at a certain point. Probably give the example of sex desire. A little child doesn't know anything about it. Doesn't make any sense to him, right? But then at a certain age, whoa, you know, it makes a lot of sense. What happened? Well, the body grew to a certain point where that particular desire is now, you know, viable, if you will. But that doesn't mean if that person is enlightened, they have to act on it. They can also perform austerity and chant Hare Krishna, and the desire can remain under control, and eventually the desire will also disappear. So the desires that we don't act on, they eventually disappear. The desires that we do act on and try to fulfill, they become stronger. So this is why so much of Krishna consciousness is acting, right? Even though I'm not a pure devotee, I don't love Krishna with one point of attention, I'm not immersed in an ocean of prema, still I come to the temple, see the deities, chant his name, read about him, serve him. And in this way, by the acting on that desire, even though it's weak and maybe flickering at a certain time, there's some attraction, that will become stronger. And the other desires, which are admittedly diminishing, I guess I can assume everyone in this room has no desire to go out and get a meal of spare ribs, right? Everyone, yeah. Obviously, the very thought of it is objectionable, right? But maybe, I can say for myself, I never was really into that, but hamburgers when I was 12, 15, it was there. And if I hadn't become, involved in devotional service, I'd probably still think that that was a good thing and have some desire for it. So what happened to it? It was purified. It was eliminated. It was fried, finished, right? By not acting on it and by cultivating desire for pakoras and samosas or whatever. So that's the idea, that yes, the desires are there, but Krishna consciousness is so powerful. It does this deep cleansing, even in all the subconscious desires, and they're fried. This is explained at the beginning of Sixth Canon. We won't get into it. And you become free of all of these latent, you call them latent desires that are liberated. Amala Bhakta Prabhu. And I guess this should be the last one. Okay.
Yes, everything that you were mentioning is certainly correct. The gross or even subtle material desires gradually fade out while the higher spiritual desires increase. But sometimes Krishna, in order to teach us, doesn't just help us through giving us knowledge, which we find in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, but sometimes he actually fulfills the desire for no other purpose than to show the devotee that the fulfillment of that desire will really make you miserable, and he does make you miserable. Having that misery, what happens is that one realizes he's been a fool all this while, and that maybe some of my other desires are just as foolish. In other words, Krishna works in the way that you are mentioning, but he also works the other way. So devotees shouldn't reproach Krishna for smashing them occasionally and fulfilling the desires, which often Krishna will fulfill in a minor or lesser way than they actually could, and the result of the pain or the misery, suffering, is diminished as compared to a person who gets that desire fulfilled in a full-blown fashion.
Mm, thank you for that. Yeah, Krishna's teaching us, and if he sees, okay, you really want this? You want me, but there's a verse about that. Satyam the satyati tamarti no ninam. There's a verse. Yeah, he certainly fulfills the desires of the devotees, but he doesn't fulfill them in such a way that they'll keep asking and asking. So this is the point, is that he gives himself, even unwanted, he gives himself if the devotee is still preaching, still praying for him, and that will cover all other desires. Iccha vidhanam nijapada pallavam. So in the course of our devotional service, if he sees, well, you really want this thing? And you're not really giving it up. Okay, here it is. Try it. And then you say, oh, what did I do? Let me run back to you. Hopefully. Now, unfortunately, that may take several lives because we've seen that devotees sometimes they go off, But once you start approaching Krishna, he's taking special care. And, hopefully, we can give up all our material desires. If not, then we may get some of them fulfilled. And we'll have a very bad taste in our mouth, and we'll run back to Krishna. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.